Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the 286-horsepower TL Type S with a sport-tuned suspension. Learn more at Acura.com.
This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, December 20th, 2007. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, Christmas Memories. I'm sure I'm not the first to say this, but I don't think it's any accident that our most festive holiday comes smack in the middle of the dreariest time of year. The trees are dead, the days are ridiculously short, it's dark all the time, cold. So we huddle together at holiday parties, we drink too much, we listen to and sing familiar songs, cling to family, dysfunctional or not. We're going to hear two Christmas poems today that open the door on all that domestic coziness and let the winds of the world blow in. The first is by Ed Skoog, a poet originally from Kansas who now lives in California. He has published a few chapbooks, and his first book, Mr. Skylight, is coming out next year from Copper Canyon Press. His poem is about neighborhood Christmas carolers. About halfway through, the carolers and the poem take a strange turn. The Carolers is read by Mary Testa.
The carolers, in scarves, boots, drinks, turn around our neighbor's pine, spilling grog into snow, approaching our porch with, "O come, all ye faithful." A few stumble or sing wrong. "Open the door, Jim, for let us adore him." Annual Christian, pipered by their pied joy, I lean to follow when they go. A hand holds me back. The lead caroler, encountering our Ford glazed with ice, undeterred, opens the door and crawls right through. Knees on the seat, gloves on the dash and headrest. The rest follow, pulling, "We saw three ships through the car like a rope." Soon I am falling asleep in vast winter bedroom silence. Part of me caroling further through local traffic, houses and towns and lives, and years of night.
Hello.
Hi, Ed.
Hi, Curtis.
Hi. So we just heard this wonderful actor named Mary Testa read your poem, The Carolers, and I wanted to ask you a few questions. You got a moment?
Absolutely.
Where are you right now?
I'm at Cantor's Deli on Fairfax and Melrose in Los Angeles,
one of
my favorite places in the world.
So I remember recording this with Mary a couple of years ago, and I remember us both being fairly baffled by what happens in the middle of that poem.
The lead caroler, encountering our Ford glazed with ice, undeterred, opens the door and crawls right through.
What's happening there?
Well, it's from a childhood memory of watching some carolers in sort of process through kind of deep snow at my friend David Hardy's house, and
back in Kansas.
Back in Kansas, in Topeka, Kansas,
mm-hmm.
Where I grew up, and the carolers came and are, you know, having that childish delight at carolers, at adults kind of acting goofy, and, you know, loving it, and that feeling of wanting to join the parade as it passes by. But then David's parents had to restrain me. They said, you know, they're drunk. These carolers had too much, you know, too much Christmas cheer and were loaded. And so they stopped at the house, sang, you know, briefly.
Uh-huh.
And then because the snowbanks were high, there was a car that was, you know, in the driveway. And instead of climbing through the snow and around the car, they opened up the car door. and the whole group of carolers just went right through the station wagon from the passenger to the driver's side.
Now, you know, when I read that, I thought you were just being fantastic and surreal. I didn't realize that you were actually recording a real event. That is
Well, it was fantastic and surreal and completely true. And it's one of my introductions to the sense that the world is highlighted occasionally by drunken genius. And so, and I remember them singing as they went through in a kind of conga line through it, you know, climbing over the seat and the gear shaft and then moving on, you know, to the next house.
And then there's a dream aspect to it. You talk about falling asleep in a vast winter bedroom silence. Is that the kid that you were falling asleep after the carolers have gone away?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it's, you know, that night, you know, after this experience, you know, going back home and going to bed and in the, you know, in the gigantic winter nights of childhood and trying to process the memory and that, you know, the way that a song lingers, that still being with them in some way, some part of me having gone with them through the car, you know, into that other world on the other side of the car of song and revelry, mm-hmm. and some part of me going off with them into the future.
Soon, I am falling asleep in vast winter bedroom silence, part of me caroling further through local traffic, houses and towns and lives, and years of night.
One Christmas was so much like the other in those years around the Seatown corner now. Out of all sound except the distant speaking of the voices I sometimes hear a moment before sleep, that I can never remember whether it snowed for 6 days and six nights when I was 12.
That, of course, is Dylan Thomas reading his classic story, A Child's Christmas in Wales. Wyatt Prunty obviously had it in mind when he came up with a poem we're about to hear, A Child's Christmas in Georgia, 1953. In spite of the title, it's a far cry from Dylan Thomas's celebratory nostalgia fest.
The source of this poem, the reason it's written, is the little boy is trying to figure out why Christmas is supposed to be such a happy time, and really what he runs into more is things that cause his parents to remember those who are no longer with them.
Wyatt Prunty teaches at the University of the South in Sewanee, Tennessee. He is associated with the New Formalist movement, which for many years now has been reviving traditional poetic forms. This poem, however, is not rhymed, though its five-line stanzas are in loose iambic pentameter.
A Child's Christmas in Georgia, 1953. Marching through Georgia to bed, he stopped, listened, and heard while shepherds washed their socks by night. Later, he sang the same skewed line off key, and his parents howled until getting it wrong, he decided, beat getting it right. But Christmas Eve they read about killing the firstborn, fleeing the land and returning by another country, till he couldn't sleep and had to check, so slipped from bed to stare the darkened height by which the wise men steered. Downstairs there were his mother's stacks of albums, and mantle high, her unblinking gallery of gold-framed graybeards gazing, and matriarchs in black, scowling the generations back into place. And then there were the others, his infant older brother, who never came home, two cousins lost in war, an uncle who captained his ship over the flat world's edge, and one fleece-lined pilot lost years now inside the stilled weather of a relative's box camera. And then there were the lines he had heard in church, pray that your flight may not be in winter. So that was how the pilot disappeared. And woe to the pregnant and nursing, so that explained his brother or their mother. There was one thing he knew by heart by now. Rubella cooked, cleaned, and scolded her way through the house, tuning the news and talking back, though she didn't vote and said her baby died because he wouldn't come out in Georgia. Still standing there and staring up, he pressed his face till the cold glass fogged and hurt his nose, though there was only the street light yellowing the side yard and his father's dormant garden and the Talmadge's coiled drive and empty house. So what were they singing about, the records and radio? And why all these presents, when over drinks his parents grieved those missing? What was given if you had to go away and wound up framed like a silent question? In the morning, Rubella would light the stove. The paper boy would whistle up millage, tossing the new day high over one hedge into another by the porch for parents who ignored their food and read to themselves. So, still at the window, he studied the sky, figuring Pontius Pilate flew for Delta, and that the two parts to the Bible were the Old and New Testaments, which, like Christmas, you read out of the names of those missing.
Wyatt Prunty reading A Child's Christmas in Georgia, 1953. His book, Unarmed and Dangerous, New and Selected Poems, is published by John Hopkins University Press. We're going to take a break over the holiday, but we'll be back in January with more podcasts. In the meantime, check out all the new podcasts. The Poetry Magazine podcast, hosted by editors Christian Wyman and Don Scher. Avant-Garde All the Time with Kenneth Goldsmith of UbuWeb, the new Poem of the Day podcast, and Poem Talk with Al Philrice of the Kelly Writers House and Penn Sound. All of them are on iTunes and on poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.